It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we're coming to you today from Johnstown, Pennsylvania, the first of two shows that we're tying in with the Hockeyville event taking place tomorrow night, culminating in an NHL exhibition game between the Pittsburgh Penguins and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Johnstown is celebrating hockey during these 2 days, but our purpose in being here is not only to talk about hockey, but also the history of Johnstown. And certainly the most historic event in the history of Johnstown is the flood of 1889. I'm joined now by Richard Burkert, a historian and the president of the Johnstown Area Heritage Association. He is an expert on the floods and other aspects of history impacting Johnstown. Richard Burkert, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. It's great to have you with us.
A pleasure to be your host for our tour of Johnstown, Paul.
And we are standing atop the incline in Johnstown, which overlooks the city, which is spreading out before us, the urban sprawl that is Johnstown of 2015. It wasn't always this way. And the one thing that strikes me, Richard, about standing up here and overlooking the city is that you can see how the water could very well come rolling in here and take out so much infrastructure, and not to mention wiping out the lives of thousands of people.
You have three. It's a miniature Pittsburgh. You have three rivers that meet here, from the south, the Stony Creek, and then from the east, the Little Conemaugh River, drain about 650 miles of steep mountainous terrain, and it all meets here in the city of Johnstown. The two rivers flow together to form the Conemaugh, the Big Conemaugh, which is a tributary of the Allegheny. The first settlers here in this valley actually came here because it was, you know, in the springtime you could put rafts, big rafts, and float on down to Pittsburgh, even down to New Orleans with iron and maple syrup and all the frontier goods. You had the Cambria Iron Company was organized in 1854. This company had a half a dozen bad years, but by the end of the Civil War, it was probably the biggest iron and then later steel center in the United States, and you know, of course, it was surpassed later by Pittsburgh and other centers.
But at that time, that's what put Johnstown on the
that's
map.
That's what put Johnstown on the map. And after the steel mill, ironworks was here, literally the population was doubling every decade.
What is the river that is directly below us at the bottom of this incline here?
That's the Stony Creek. The Johnstown flood came down the river straight ahead of us, the Little Conemaugh River, and 14 miles east of here by river was the old Western Reservoir. It had been built by the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania for the canal system, but in 1879 it was purchased by the South Fork Fishing and Hunting Club. Henry Clay Frick was one of the charter members of that group. And by 1889, there were 63 members. And many of their names you'd recognize. They were mostly Pittsburgh industrialists and financiers. It was really an exclusive private resort. Now, the real problem with that in the, you know, the canal reservoir had been abandoned and really it needed a total rebuild. And instead of properly rebuilding, the club's agents really patched it up with whatever was closely available. It was an accident waiting to happen. The first big rain, would have been referred to as a 25-year flood. They had 8 inches of rain, but it wasn't, you know, we've had much bigger rains since then. But that reservoir, the dam was overtopped about noon, and a little bit after 3 o'clock, it pushed away and it began the flood wave. Began an hour-long descent on the city. Now, with that rain, the city was already submerged in 3 to 10 feet of water. It was the worst recorded flood up there that time. And then when the flood wave hit, it was like turning on Niagara Falls on top of the flooded city. As the flood wave came into Johnstown through the notch in the hills on the Little Conemaugh there, it was estimated by eyewitnesses to be 37 feet high at its crest, which tore out the center of the city, crashed against the hillside where the inclined plain is, and then backwashed up the Stony Creek as far as 3 miles. The worst was over in 10 minutes. 1,600 buildings were removed by the flood wave. 2,209 people lost their lives out of about 20,000 that were here when the flood hit.
And of course, Johnstown became very famous for that flood, but as much as people might have hoped that it would be the last, it was not the last of the floods to hit Johnstown.
Well, Johnstown did everything in its power to rebuild quickly and to put the disaster behind it. The town within a few years was back to normal, more or less. But flooding continued. I mean, you know, every 10 years there'd be water in the streets. There were a lot of bad environmental practices. They'd literally cut the widths of the rivers in half. You know, they'd fill in and make land, which exacerbated the flooding problem. But
where were the engineers? Why weren't there people with better ideas?
They did set the widths of the river by city ordinance, but they had no money to restore the contours. And as a result, in March of 1936, we had the so-called St. Patrick's Day flood on March 17th, 1936. You had a heavy snowpack with a lot of additional rain. And so the city was under 14 feet of water. It wasn't a flash flood, so you had relatively small loss of life, but you had, you know, $45 million in property damage in the depths of the Depression. And so the Corps of Engineers F. Franklin Roosevelt pushed a bill designing flood control devices for Johnstown. And in 1938, the bill was passed and they began construction of the first river channelization project in America. Took 9 miles of rivers here in Johnstown, widened them, deepened them, straightened them. And the idea was to increase the capacity so much they could carry off any record flood. And when they finished that project in 1942, they went out and told the country Johnstown had solved its flood problems. And there was editorials all every newspaper in the United States, billboards. Even we have a letter from Franklin Roosevelt where he salutes the flood-free city of Johnstown. And so it seemed.
I having grown up in this area, I know what else was to come. What happened here in 1977?
Well, you can always depend on nature to do the unexpected. Well, we had a significant flood here July 20th, 19th, and 20th, 1977. You had 12 inches of rain in 6 hours in the areas surrounding Johnstown. It was a freak storm, and with that much water ending up, well, the channels were overtopped. And there was flooding in the city, but there were a lot of other contributing factors. The real killers that night were a lot of these small streams that in July, you know, Sam's Run, Peggy's Run, Solomon's Run, no one even knew their names, but they're, instead of being 2 inches deep, they're 20 feet deep that night, and really did just mayhem in some of these communities.
So you're saying there will never be another flood in Johnstown?
I'm not saying that.
Fascinating history. Let's get on this incline and head down the hill. So now we move downtown right across from Central Park, and you're going to point to a place, Richard, where people took sanctuary on May 31st, 1889, during the Johnstown flood.
It's a little hard to see through the trees, but there's a massive stone church built in 1869, the Franklin Street Methodist Church. Actually, is credited with parting one of the main currents of the flood wave as it came into the downtown area and saved several buildings on the lee side. You know, that one of them was Alma Hall, which was built in the 1880s. It was the biggest building in Johnstown. It was Lodge Hall, offices and stores on the first floor, which it still is today. And 264 people made their way across the wreckage on the night of the Johnstown flood and spent that terrible night there, hearing buildings go down and, you know, crashing and screams. They appointed temporary governments for each floor. And somehow they made it through that night and made their way across the wreckage to dry land the next day. But that, you know, that's really a great symbol of, the survivors and, the it's really amazing that as many people survived the Great Flood. When you look at the photographs of the Johnstown Flood, everything's gone. And it's, you know, people survived floating on pieces of wreckage or the roof or whatever and following the different currents and eventually getting into a place of sanctuary.
So we saw the Stony Creek Bridge from way up high at the top of the incline, and now we are down at the point, and the bridge is right in front of us, and this is one of the things that's still standing after the flood of 1889.
The Pennsylvania Railroad Stone Bridge was built, really finished just 2 years before the Johnstown Flood. The bridge wasn't hit directly, and it held and acted as a dam. And then all the wreckage of Johnstown backed up behind it, and believe it or not, in the midst of this flood, it all caught fire. There were tank cars of petroleum products, kerosene soaked down through the mass, houses with their coal stove burning washed against it. So you had a giant fire here, a funeral pyre, and that burned for 3 days until the Pittsburgh Fire Department was able to come in by rail and put it out. The wreckage backed up behind the stone bridge, covering 30 acres to depths up to 30 feet. It was just an unbelievable sight.
Let's walk down toward the point. Well, we have a train that's going over the stone bridge, and we are literally at the point looking at this is the Conemaugh River to my right.
Little Conemaugh,
and to the left
is Stony Creek.
And so we are how many feet above the water on this platform we're standing on?
We're probably 30 feet above, and this would have been the flood wave and the wreckage would have been at least this high, if not higher, in 1889.
So we're standing at the point that the water rose to?
Yeah. Now, the physics of the flood wave are fascinating. As the flood wave came down the valley, the bottom of the wave, with the friction, was traveling slower than the top. So the top was always cascading over the bottom. So what you almost had was a ball of water pushing ahead of it, everything. So when people saw the flood wave, it didn't look like water. It looked like a 25 or 30 foot high mountain of wreckage. A lot of people had no idea what it was. They thought there had been an industrial accident and some, you know, the hill was, you know, advancing across the landscape. It was all shrouded in a black cloud of dust that it picked up when it hit the wireworks up here.
And of course, there was so much devastation and the loss of over 2,000 lives. Why don't you take us up to the cemetery where there are hundreds of unmarked graves? We're now walking toward row upon row of graves, and I tell you, if it didn't hit you from up top looking down on it, it really hits you now. You realize, Richard, just how many people died, and the fact that, you know, something like 800 of them were unidentified, what a tragedy.
What is an appalling tragedy? And Victorian Americans really threw their sentiments into dating Johnstown. There was nearly $3 million in cash alone came from across the country and 12 foreign countries. Record charity, the governor of Pennsylvania actually had to appoint a charitable commission to distribute all that charity that was used to rebuild Johnstown. This was the last thing that commission did, was reinter some of the unidentified victims here. Some of them are identified, but weren't claimed by next of kin. They were relentless about getting on with the future. The next day, the main newspaper, the Tribune, their editor George Swank, editorialized that the, you know, flood with all its train of horrors is behind us, and we have henceforth to do with the future alone. And that was, you know, that was the gospel here. You didn't dwell on your loss. You didn't dwell on the unfairness and the tragedy, and you know, and their memorial was, you know, rebuilt and bigger Johnstown. And it was really, you know, much later that the idea of memorializing this tragedy, you know, began to grow.
Well, when you look at these tombstones, I mean, it really makes it about more than just numbers and statistics. You can think about more clearly the lives lost here in Johnstown.
We do know something about at least one of the victims. Some victims weren't claimed by next of kin, and there's one 18-year-old waitress in the Holbert Hotel, which collapsed in the flood. Maggie Irwin was found. Her parents had moved out of Johnstown the year before, and she was on her own here. And she's writing letters to them asking for money so she could buy a new coat. And, you know, she's just a, you know, young woman. And there's a description there. One of the flood authors mentions seeing her in a morgue and how she had waited on him the night before. It turns out she's buried. Maggie lies among the unidentified here in the plot of the unknown.
Well, I want to thank our guest, Richard Burkert, who is president of the Johnstown Area Heritage Association, for taking us on a tour of the sites that are integral to the historic tale of the floods in Johnstown, particularly the big one in 1889. Richard Burkert, thank you so much for joining us here on this edition of Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you, Paul. It was great fun.
Coming up, our special program from Johnstown continues with a look at the economic past, present, and future of Johnstown. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.